Hey everybody, this is B. Sal here of the Vault of Horror, and you are listening to the Vault Cast, specifically Conversations in the Dark. And this week, my guest in Conversations in the Dark is Sean Abley, joining me tonight, who you may know from Gay of the Dead, the blog which is part of Fangoria.com. At the moment, as a lot of people have pointed out, the website is down, but you can find Sean's stuff at his personal blog, which is Zombie Truck Stop, which you'll find at zombietruckstop.livejournal.com. So thanks for coming in for Conversations in the Dark tonight, Sean.
Oh, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Great. And tonight we're going to be talking about kind of a favorite topic, I think, of people in general, not even just of horror, but in movies in general, and it's guilty pleasures. So we're going to be talking about, you know, those movies that you like or you love, even though you think you probably shouldn't, but they just give you so much pleasure that you can't help it. So when you were thinking of this, what did you have a specific movie or movies in mind?
I sure did. Because the one – and the funny thing is I don't know if it's exactly a horror movie, but it's sort of folded into the horror genre, and that's I Spit on Your Grave.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's
I actually think it's hilarious. And not because violence against women is hilarious, but because they're just so audacious in – trying to present this movie as some sort of affirmation of the power of women who've been victimized, when really, you know, it's just an excuse to show a naked woman being raped for, you know, 90 minutes.
It's funny because it's a movie that still to this day is controversial, you know, and because I think part of that, it's funny that you describe it that way, because people, I think, don't know how they're supposed to take it, you know? It kind of, like, some people take it exactly the way you're describing it. Some people, I mean, everybody can agree that it's an exploitation movie, obviously.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's funny in a way because Cannibal Holocaust, which I just saw for the first time, is a little bit like this too, in the sense that it pretends to be all very high-minded about these moral, you know, kind of this very moral purpose that it has. But it really is an exploitation movie that's trying to get a rise out of you. And yes, we are talking about a movie that has, what, a 25-minute rape scene in it? Is that the statistic?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's they find her. They beat her up. They rape her. She crawls away. They beat her up again. They rape her again. She crawls away again. They beat her up again. They rape her again. She gets to her house. They beat her up and rape her again, and then leave her for dead. I mean, this is the grand plot of this film.
But she gets her bloody revenge on every one of them, though, right?
She does. She does. And, of course, that's fun. Although I still wince at the bathtub scene.
Well, I think every man, there's really no way not to. It's just not possible. It's very funny because I think you're familiar with the actual blog Day of the Woman.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah, by BJC. As you can tell, this movie is like almost the touchstone, basically, of everything she does on there. And we've talked about this movie a lot because first of all, that always comes up, just the difficulty of getting through that scene, especially for a guy. And also the whole question of how we're supposed to take this movie, because it might be trying on some level to make some kind of a social statement, which I think is their way of getting away with not having the movie just banned for obscenity. But, you know, at the bottom of it, yeah, they're really just trying to get a rise out of you, you know. So it is one of those – it's one of those classic exploitation movies. It's basically the definition of an exploitation movie, you know.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, she's being exploited. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt as far as the message. But I really feel like at some point one of the filmmakers – saw a pamphlet about women's empowerment, you know, and like that's the depth of their knowledge on the subject.
Like it was a gimmick.
Yeah, exactly.
It was an angle, basically, to make, a sexually charged movie that they knew was going to get a lot of people's attention. And I mean, look what they make for the cover and the poster of the movie. It's very obvious what their goals are.
Yeah.
I think you could probably take something away from it in the sense that at least in the end, the message that they're saying, in a way, it's a little depressing because she becomes as much of a monster as they were, But it's hard for me. Like I don't find it to be as reprehensible, I think, as a lot of people do. Because I think you could, if you choose to, you could take something, affirming away from it if you choose to. And I think that they probably wanted something like that to be buried in there underneath all of the titillating stuff.
Yeah. Well, certainly they got the, the straight guys in who wanted to see boobs with the poster. And, that sort of paid off for the first 60 minutes of the movie. And yes, she's being assaulted, but hey, naked girl. And so now they're all comfortable in their seats, and then the castration starts.
Yeah,
So
it's amazing to me the way that what they do is they put you at ease and they actually get you even in spite of yourself. They're showing you things that are supposed to pique your interest or what have you, and then later on it just gets just horrendous and
yeah.
just impossible to get through.
I actually have a funny story about the movie. I was doing some reporting for this thing called Expanded Books, and I was at the book release party for Crystal Lake Memories, that big coffee table book by Peter Brackey,
Sure.
the Friday the 13th book, and they had everybody there. And so I'm interviewing the girl who played the baby in Jason Goes to Hell, who at the time I interviewed her was like 14 or something like that.
Wow.
And yeah, so I'm interviewing her mother as well, and I made a joke. I said, "Well, you put your child in a Friday the 13th movie. Do I need to call, Child Protective Services?" She said, "Oh, no. My dad, I was in an exploitation movie. My dad put me in an exploitation movie, and I'm fine." I'm like, "What movie was that?" And she said, "Well, I'm one of the two kids in I Spit on Your Grave." So the girl who played the baby in Jason Goes to Hell, her grandfather made I Spit on Your Grave.
Wow, I'm trying to process all of that. So it's just sort of like passing the schlock along from generation to generation. It's pretty impressive. But
Exactly.
what?
No, I just said exactly. It's
Oh
like
yeah.
I want to hang out and be around when this girl has kids of her own, just to
Oh, I
find out
know.
what
I know.
what
Maybe
she
they'll be in Hostel 13,
does.
But what I was going to say, oh, we could talk about that movie all night. That's the classic exploitation
Yeah.
movie. And definitely a guilty pleasure movie, because I do, as much as you could enjoy a movie like that, I do get a kick out of it. If I could, I would, when you mentioned it, what I was thinking, whenever I think of guilty pleasures with horror movies, the one that always comes to mind for some reason with me is, are you familiar with Terror Vision?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That was a sci-fi horror movie from the 80s for people that may not know it. And for some reason, when I was a kid, this thing was all over HBO. So I think it was HBO, either that or we were just renting it constantly. For some reason, I have a memory of watching it a lot, okay, in like, I guess, the mid to late 80s. And we watched it so much that me and this friend of mine, we would actually be quoting lines from it. We might be the only people that ever quoted lines from Terror Vision. But it's this really schlocky 80s sci-fi horror movie about an alien, like an alien, I don't know what it is, like a pet or something, and it gets transmitted into their home via the television airwaves, and it just starts eating people and hiding in their house. But it's so incredibly bad, but I can't help but enjoy it. I just love it. I just can't, I don't know what it is about it.
Now, was that one a Tim Thomerson special? Was he in that one?
I think it's very possible. I could probably IMDb this as we're talking, but
Because I remember the film, and I remember that it was omnipresent when We're a little different in age. You're in your 30s, right?
I'm 35, yeah.
Yeah, I'm 43, so we're about almost a generation apart.
Oh,
But
wow.
in the early days of HBO, when I was a kid, they had very limited movies, and I remember Terrorvision was on like 14 times a day.
So then it was
Right.
HBO.
Yeah, and right next to like Coal Miner's Daughter and time after time, like they had these
Yes.
great highbrow movies, and then these things they got for $5.
And Watership Down was a very popular one in those days on HBO, if you remember that,
I
constantly.
do. I remember the I remember seeing the movie. I was too young to see it, too young to appreciate it, because I remember when the rabbits got hit by the train, I laughed because I just thought that was ridiculous.
Oh, how cold-hearted of you.
I know.
But let
I
me tell you
know.
though, that actually has some elements of the horrific in it as well, especially for a little kid thinking it's going to be like some Disney movie. I mean, there's that's a pretty unsettling movie for a kid to watch. We could probably do a whole thing on that. But
Yeah, I mean, don't rabbits get caught in snares and
oh, and they
killed
just
in that film?
they fight to the death and they just gnaw each other until they're bloody. Good stuff.
Yeah, I love it.
But yeah, that's a big one. And there was another one from that period too. I think they used to show it on HBO a lot called Saturday the 14th, which
Oh my gosh, I loved that movie.
I got a feeling that brought something back for you. But it was funny because it came out right after Friday the 13th, but it had absolutely nothing to do with it at all. It was just sort of like, I guess, a play off of the name. But
Yeah.
that was a
It
riot.
was more of a scary movie, basically. It was sort
Yes.
of a lot of cliches. I remember this is how much I love that movie. I can quote lines from the movie. There's a moment where Paula Prentice, who's been bitten by a vampire, and she's slowly changing into a vampire, and she's in her bed, and Richard Benjamin comes in to wake her up, and he pulls back the covers, and the bed is covered with dirt, like from the grave.
Right.
Like, your bed is covered with earth, and she says, "I spilled a plant."
I remember that. And I remember the part too where they're planning their party. They're planning a party, and the first thing they say is that they're gonna have it on Friday the 13th, and then they realize it's booked and they have to switch it to Saturday the 14th.
Yes.
I just remember that moment.
They're planning the party, and Richard Benjamin opens the freezer to get some ice, and he pulls out an ice cube tray that has cobwebs on it, and for some reason says, "This ice is so old." And I'm not sure why that's a joke, but it made me laugh at the time.
Yeah, it helps, I guess, if you're younger, or maybe if you're a kid, you find some of these things funny. But yeah.
I was gonna say, they did a sequel.
I heard that, but I never saw it.
It was called Saturday the 14th Strikes Back, or alternately Thursday the 12th. And some chick from my hometown of Helena, Montana, she was in it, and I never saw it, but I remember meeting her and had stars in my eyes. That,
Wow.
oh my gosh, you were in a movie, Saturday the 14th
Well,
Part 2.
I've got one that another one that when I was in high school, it was sort of like this underground bootleg thing that we would toss around, and now it's become a cult phenomenon. At the time, it wasn't, but it's Slime City, which,
I haven't seen it. I have not
yeah,
seen it.
it is the epitome of just a cultish. Really bad, so bad it's a good horror movie. And I've actually gotten acquainted with the guys who made it in recent years just from message boards and stuff online because they were from my neighborhood in Brooklyn. I remember they filmed it nearby to where I was going to school at the time, and we used to trade the movie around. It was right after, it's funny because it was right after I discovered The Evil Dead. Okay, and
Oh,
I
yeah.
sort of put it in that same category because it was this guy getting possessed by this demonic force and all this, and there was just a lot of slime and ooze and guts in it. But I mean, it looks like it was shot on, I think it might have been shot on video. I don't even know. I mean, it is, it's definitely in the so bad it's good category. You should check it out.
Didn't didn't they just wrap a sequel to that after all these years with like Debbie Rochon?
They did because it might have been a 20th anniversary or something. Because I remember when I saw this, it was about 20 years ago. It might have been a 20th or a 25th anniversary because the movie has become such a bizarre phenomenon, which surprised me. When I started blogging and getting on message boards and stuff, I discovered that a lot of people knew about this movie. I honestly thought that no, I didn't think anybody knew about it. I thought it was just something that me and my friends, you know, in high school knew about, and we found this weird movie on a videotape and made a bootleg out of it. And I didn't know that it was a big deal at all. Not to say that it's a huge deal, but I had no idea that other people were into this movie. It was really crazy to find that out.
It's funny, you know, you put something out there, and now we live in a world where it could still be around in 20 years, you know,
Very
even if
true.
you thought it was disposable at the time.
That's very true. I think about that actually with a lot of the things that I post on online.
Ah, oh, I know. I know. I you know, my blog, the Zombie Truck Stop blog, started out as a personal, I started out as sort of a fiction blog where I was living in a world where the dead had come to life. And so I was blogging about it and getting all emo about it several years ago. And sometimes I think I should go lock that stuff down.
That's good. Yeah, see, I imagine sometimes, you know, my kids in 10 years' time going online and looking at my stuff that's like 10, 15 years old, and like, what will they think about it? Yeah, I think about things like that. It's
I
fun.
know.
Yeah, good times.
I have a stack. It's funny. I'm sitting in my office right now, and I'm looking at my wall of DVDs, and I feel it's almost a wall of guilty pleasure because, quite honestly, the worse the movie, the more I love it. And I it might be from a filmmaker's point of view, I don't know, but I love to watch bad, low budget movies just to see how they do it,
Well, here's a
you know?
question. Here's a question now on that topic. This is something that interests me. Now, how do you differentiate, okay, between something that is quote unquote so bad it's good and it's a guilty pleasure, and you know, how do you differentiate that from a movie that is just a plain old really bad piece of shit movie that you can't enjoy in the same way? Like, what's the difference?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you said shit because I wasn't sure I was allowed to swear. So I thank you
Yeah,
for
well, if there's kids listening, so what? Grow up, kids. Life's tough.
Right. You know, I think part of it has to do with the intention of the filmmakers, I think, comes through sometimes. And that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, bad movies that we love were made with the best intentions, but I think there's a line of like laziness that that shows in bad movies that are just bad, as opposed to bad movies that are awesome. And I'm of course trying to think what would an example be. And I think, you know, one of them. Okay, here's one. Giant Spider Invasion.
Okay.
Have you seen this film?
No.
It was done. It was shot in, I think, Wisconsin, back when I was a teenager. And it's about giant spiders that attack a town. And, like, literally, the spiders are VW bugs covered with fur and legs attached, and they drive them around and then move the legs. It's awful, but awesome because you can see that the filmmakers in the middle of nowhere had stars in their eyes and were like, we're going to Hollywood, but
Right.
screw Hollywood, we'll do it our own way. And, you know, made this movie. That, you know, so that's, to me, that's. I don't know. Even as I say these words, I might be backing off it, but I think on some level, if you can sort of feel the filmmaker's intent,
So you think
that.
that, so you think it's the it's the passion for what they're doing that can help save it from being just a really bad movie and turn it into a bad movie that becomes a guilty pleasure? Is it knowing that these people really believed in this and really put their heart into it, even if it's tongue in cheek, you know what I mean? Like, rather than just that it's this cynical endeavor of just, you know, let's try and turn a buck.
Yeah, I think so because I look at Roger Corman's stable of, you know, amazing people that have come out of his factory, basically.
Yeah.
And while Roger Corman, as much as I, you know, love the man and love what he's done, he's the guy who's just looking to make a buck. You know what I mean? But
Right.
the people that came up under him that he gave the chances to, those were the people that were desperate to make films and driven to make, you know, to do anything they could to get a film made. So that's why so many of Roger Corman's films, things like Galaxy of Terror is the one that's popping to my mind, which I absolutely love, and I'm so glad it's coming out on DVD. Is one of those films that you know, you watch and you're like, yeah, that's a lot of fun. You know, it's obviously made for $2, but the people who put it together were trying to do something, and they did what they could for the money. So
I think that's what draws people to Corman's movies in general, that the ones he produces, because he's just such a maverick, and I'm sorry that word has been utterly ruined in our culture in the last year and a half, but I'm going to use it anyway. He really is. And he's just, he does it. I mean, yeah, I know as a producer, he does it to turn a profit, obviously, but he gives chances to people and he's still doing it. And a lot of his movies, you just can feel it coming off the screen. It's just that we're going to make a movie here. It's just the joy of making a movie. There's one that's coming to mind now. I'm pretty sure this is a Corman movie. I could be wrong. Did you ever hear of Attack of the Giant Leeches?
Oh, yeah. And okay. I believe that's one of his, yes.
Yes. I watched it a couple of weeks ago on one of these, 8,000 public domain horror movies in a box kind of things that you buy at FYE or whatever. And it was on there. And it was one of those, the acting is, I think it's from, early 60s or something. The acting is abominable, okay? The giant leeches consist literally of people crawling around inside garbage bags. And that's really all it is. But I got such a kick out of it. And not only did I get a kick out of it, but in the process of making this thing, I think maybe even by accident, because they were so enjoying what they were doing and obviously so into it, they actually stumbled upon a few moments that are genuinely disturbing and scary in the movie, which I think is probably just by coincidence, but it does happen. And I think it happens because they were loving what they were doing.
Yeah. Hey, that reminds me of I don't know why the film doesn't remind me of this film, but the circumstance does. Do you remember Don Dohler's The Alien Factor?
The Alien Factor. Why does that ring a bell?
Again, it was, made in the 80s. It's super low budget. Again, not shot in Hollywood. It was shot somewhere in the Midwest and for, no money. And it's just about these aliens randomly taking over a town. And I think it was his first. I could be wrong about that. Anyway, but it's got a ton of heart.
Mm-hmm.
The aliens are obviously like people covered with fur walking on the top of, ski boots, that kind of thing.
Nice.
But it was one of those things when TV sort of exploded in the 80s, not just HBO type stuff, but suddenly we had more channels and they all needed programming. So any movie that you made for $5, you could sell it to TV stations. And The Alien Factor was on in Helena, Montana approximately once a week.
Yeah, because that would happen a lot. You would have these channels, and even before that it was with syndicated TV that were just so hungry for programming all the time, they would constantly be throwing up, reruns of old TV shows, or they'd have a collection of movies that they would just kind of cycle through repeatedly, and a lot of them were those B movies.
Yeah. Our local horror movie show, by the way, was called Dungeon Theater. Where did you grow up, by the way?
I grew up in New York, so we actually had Zachary, which is slightly before my time. My dad talks about him a lot. I vaguely remember him. I know him now because he does all the conventions in the area. We have the Chiller Theater Convention here in New Jersey, and he's always there. So, I know of him very much, but I don't really remember him. I remember another guy who was in the 80s. I vaguely remember. The name is escaping me. If there's anybody in the New York area listening, they may know this. But, God, I vaguely remember this guy. I don't remember the name. But, gosh, we had – Chiller Theater was another big one. That's where the name of the convention comes from. They would show, the old movies, the old horror movies.
Yeah. It's funny because, I'm looking at the stack of films here. And I don't know. Is this a guilty pleasure? It's so popular, but I feel like it should be a guilty pleasure because it's so reprehensible, and that's Maniac.
Well, you're talking about – is that the one with Joe Spinell?
Yeah.
Okay. They were just I have never had a chance to see that, and I've always wanted to, and they just showed it a few months ago as part of the New York City Horror Film Festival, and I actually traveled to the city to see it. My wife and I went, and we met up with with a couple
date
of
date night, huh?
Well, it was a double date. I went down to, if Tenebris Kate is listening to this, she knows it was Tenebris Kate of Love Train for the Tenebris Empire. Her and her boyfriend and myself and my wife, and we were supposed to go see this thing. And we just wound up just staying at the bar. We never made it. We never made it to the theater. We just kind of stayed where we were, and we just got lazy. And so I never got to see it.
You really should. It's interesting because it's really sleazy, and it doesn't really have a plot. It just has a series of things that happen in a row, and you know, it's about scalping women and, you know, I'm sure you must have seen the pictures of, like, you know, Tom Savini's head being shot off and all
yes.
that stuff.
Yeah, I have seen stuff, and I've seen, you know, the shots of Joe Spinell just being all crazy. And I love Joe Spinell. I mean, The Godfather, and he was really chichi. He's got something, and he was the bookie in Rocky. I mean, he's one of my favorite supporting actors of that era, so I have to get around to seeing that.
You need to see it, because you know it's his one lead.
Yeah, I know.
And then he died.
Oh, and he was the dispatcher and Taxi Driver too. I mean, that guy was everywhere. But but one other thing I wanted to get to, and because I mean we could talk all night about this stuff, but before we get through. I had a question. It was, you know, we're talking about a lot of older movies going back to the 60s and 70s and 80s. My question is this a phenomenon that doesn't occur anymore, or do we need to have the distance of time to really be able to tell? Like, you know, most of the time, movies that come out in recent years, you either love them or you hate them. There doesn't seem to be that so bad it's good kind of window in between. Is that something that just happens over time?
That's a good question.
Because the reason I ask that is because there's movies now that are just really bad, but nobody says, oh, that was so bad it was good. They just kind of rant and rave about how awful it was, you know?
Yeah, and maybe it does take time, because I think it's either you liked it or you didn't, as opposed to it was so bad I loved it, if that makes sense. And, you know, I'm thinking of a movie, I may be the one person that will defend this movie, but Sorority Row.
Ah, okay. I can see
that. I liked it. I thought it was smarter and funnier than it had any right to be. It was directed energetically. It was, you know, performed fairly well. And you know, but it's very, you know, but I'm not saying that it's so bad that I loved it. I'm actually saying I'm giving it credit for what it did, what I think it did right. But
right.
Or like, that thing's a piece of crap, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of something, and it's tough, you know.
Yeah, I think now, I'm trying to think of other modern movies that I find a guilty pleasure that I have to defend myself for. Well, High Tension is another one that I actually really love that I have to defend myself for. But again, I think it's a good film. I don't think it's so bad it's good.
Right.
Wow.
I guess
there are those so bad it's good movies. Maybe they're all on DVD now.
I think that might be it. It might be a lot of direct to DVD, because I'm trying to think of a movie that if, in the past couple of years that I would consider a guilty pleasure. I mean, you know, there's certain movies like, you know, a movie like Orphan, which is, you know, it on the surface it looks like it's going to be completely cheeseball, but I actually thought that was a pretty damn good horror movie. So like, I wouldn't classify that as a guilty pleasure. It was just a good movie. And, you know, Jennifer's Body, you know, is controversial. It's one of those movies that people either say they enjoyed it or they say that they hated it. And it's not like people it's not really what you'd call a guilty pleasure kind of thing. It's weird. And I think it's because they're more recent. You know, maybe in 10 years from now, people will consider that movie to be a guilty pleasure. I don't know.
Maybe. I can think of two films that I think that I've come up with two titles that I look at and I think, okay, those movies are an absolute mess, but I love them. And it was Southland Tales, which I adored, and David Lynch's Inland Empire.
Yes.
Both crazy, you know, both really challenging to sit through because of their construction and their direction and everything. and there's a case to be made that they're so bad they're awesome.
Well, I just thought of one actually that I really did not like this movie, but I can see how somebody would say it was a guilty pleasure and they could get a sort of Mystery Science Theater 3000 kick out of it, and that would be The Happening. And now you're going to tell me you love The Happening.
No, I okay. just saw that, and I've said in my blog that I don't review movies because I just don't. I as a filmmaker, I feel like it's not my place.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
M. Night Shyamalan, whatever, The Emperor Has No Clothes. And yeah. he's the one filmmaker that I will point to. Every movie of his is a Twilight Zone episode. I've known the ending of every movie of his before I've even gotten into the theater, and some of them I haven't even seen, and I've said to my friends, oh, is this the ending of that movie? And they're like, yeah, how'd you know? I'm like, because I watched Twilight Zone. And we caught, my husband and I caught The Happening the other day.
Oh, my condolences.
It's just, I mean, I don't know. Could we say that he was trying to do Day of the Triffids? Maybe, I don't know. It was, you know.
People have said that.
I think I don't know. I don't think history. I don't think that movie's going to come back around. I don't think people are going to in 10, 15 years be like,
see,
you know what's an underappreciated classic? The Happening.
The Happening. Well, you see, what kills me about him is, yeah, he's a one-trick pony. Okay, he's a gimmick filmmaker, and he never, whenever he cites his inspirations, he will always say Hitchcock or he will say Spielberg. And he will never say Rod Serling. And I think it is specifically because he wants to distract people from the notion that his movies are basically overblown Twilight Zone episodes, which is what they are. And The Happening, gosh, I mean, I've some people are more forgiving with that movie because they try to see it as they couldn't possibly be serious. We're meant to laugh, it's meant to be laughable. But see, I don't think so. I think it's completely in earnest, and it's just a total and complete disaster.
I agree 100%. And here's why I think you're correct, and I'm correct, I guess. There's the scene where Marky Mark is talking to the plant, and then sort of has that moment of realization and literally says, I'm talking to a fucking plant.
Yes.
That was M. Night, whatever the hell his name is, that was his sort of out. That was him trying to have the audience or get them on board. Yes, this is a crazy thought, but, you know, the characters in the movie understand that too, so come along for the ride. And sorry, I'm not taking that ride. The movie is so bad and so wrong and so poorly thought out that it's hard to criticize it because you don't know where to start.
Yeah, you watch it and you almost think you have to be, as a viewer, doing something wrong. You must be missing something because a movie that big, that mainstream, could not possibly be that bad and that poorly executed. And you almost have to, like, pinch yourself. At least that was my reaction. I almost thought, like, am I missing something here, you know? And he, you know, I will say, probably, you know, if there's one reason why I'll be happy that movie existed, it would be because it inspired the Andy Samberg, Mark Wahlberg talks to animals on Saturday Night Live, which is probably the best thing to come out of it.
That sort of comedy collateral damage.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Well, you know, we could go on and on forever with this, but I think we've been talking for over a half hour now. So, don't want to bore people too much with all of our guilty pleasure recollections, but I do want to thank you very much for being on. And obviously, with a collection of shamelessly bad movies as you probably have, we could probably do this again sometime.
Oh, I would love to. I have a wall. Like I said, I'm looking at a wall. There's 1,000 DVDs on it, literally, and they're all horror. So I could. We could just start at the A's with Alien Dead and go from there.
That's great. You maybe even end with Zombie 3, you know?
How about the other zombie, the one that has gay porn star Jeff Stryker in it? I think that's Zombie 4.
Wonderful. Well, yeah, well, Zombie 4 would follow Zombie 3. That'd be great. It could be a nice little double feature. But for people listening, Sean's main blog is Gay of the Dead, located on Fangoria.com, which hopefully will be back up and running shortly. That might be where you know him best from. But in the meantime, you can find him at the Zombie Truck Stop, which is what is it again? ZombieTruckStop. LiveJournal.com. That's right. So it's been a pleasure having you here tonight. Conversations in the Dark. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Brian.
All right.